Kia ora koutou. As Bevan said, my name's Mark. I'm one of the pastors here. And I've got this standalone message in between a couple of great series, in between kind of looking at the creed and kind of some of the heart and soul of what we believe, and then leading into James, which is, again, the super practical book of kind of helping us live out life in the way that that God intends for us. But this one message, again, talking about words that wound. And I need to be real clear that I'm not going to be covering all of the different words that could wound. While we're talking about gossip and the way that we talk about other people can bring harm, and how we can do better. But I also want to acknowledge that many of us have been wounded by words, and it's not just what other people have said behind our backs, but sometimes to our face, whether that's on purpose or whether it's just been thoughtless and insensitive. Many of us, probably most of us, carry some wounds from words that have been said to us. And so I don't want to take that lightly. And I also want to acknowledge that you may be listening to this and going, oh, but that wasn't what happened for me, but someone still hurt me. I'm really sorry that happened. I'm going to be addressing gossip, but we'll come back to words that wound actually later on in James, and the power of the tongue, the way that our words can really negatively affect other people. The other thing that I wanted to acknowledge this morning as well is gossip is really widespread and actually really difficult to avoid. And so probably as I go along, there may be moments when you go, oh, that's me. In the same way that as I was preparing, I also went, oh, that's me. And I don't want this to be heavy. God doesn't want us to be ashamed, but he wants us to change. And so this is an opportunity to not get focused on what we've done in the past and go into a downward spiral, but to think about what can we do in the future? What does it look like to be better, to speak more positively, to be able to build people up and lift them? If you get to that place where you're going, oh, I've done this wrong, oh, and you're feeling that way, God always invites us to come to him for forgiveness, and his forgiveness is there for us. He wants us to grow and change. He wants us sometimes to make amends. If we know that we've hurt somebody with the words we've said, actually sometimes to go and acknowledge it is really important. But this is not a thing of putting shame onto people, but giving a vision of a better future. Because that's where we want to go. That's where we want to live our lives, is that better future, rather than getting stuck on past things that we've done. Because ultimately, all of us have got things in our past that we don't like. And it took me a while to realize this, but only God could change the past, and he doesn't. So the past is the past, but we leave it there, and we grow and move forward. Sometimes we can fix some of the things that we've done. But I'm going to start this morning with a slightly odd passage. And this is one which I've had questions about over a period of time. It's in Genesis 9. So the setting here, very early on in the story of the world, Noah's flood has just come through. So there's just this one family surviving on earth, Noah and his sons and all of their wives. And this happens. Noah, a man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard. When he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay uncovered inside his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father naked and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it across their shoulders. Then they walked in backward and covered their father's naked body. Their faces were turned the other way so they would not see their father naked. When Noah awoke from his wine and found out what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Cursed be Canaan, the lowest of slaves be he to his brothers." He also said, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Shem. May Canaan be the slave of Shem. May God extend Japheth's territory. May Japheth live in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be the slave of Japheth." I've always looked at that and go, well, firstly, what on earth? Why is the son getting cursed for what the father has done? Ham was the father of Canaan, and Canaan seems to get all the consequences. But also, why is this so serious? What is happening that simply by walking in on his father in a drunken stupor, lying naked, and then going and telling his brothers, what's going on here? And I think we've watered this down so much, but actually Ham dishonors his father. He could have done what his brothers did, actually, and just cover it over. Leave it alone. Don't mention it. Don't bring it up. Don't embarrass or shame his father. But he goes and he talks about it. He goes and spreads the story around that nobody else would have known or needed to know. And we have the example of Shem and Japheth. They go out of their way to cover over their father's mistake, to cover over something that would embarrass or shame him. And so there's this huge contrast here between what Noah kind of focuses on and acknowledges for these different of his sons, that he basically celebrates this choice that the two older sons made of going, again, covering over what he's done rather than spreading it around, rather than allowing that shame and that dishonor to be something that kind of clung on. And this is particularly relevant for us this year as we talk about true faith. And in the passage in Romans that we're focusing on, it says, honor others above yourself. We actually need to be people who live in order to honor other people. And part of that actually is the way that we speak about them. I think part of the thing that we need to get our heads around as well, and that this story kind of helps us to realize with the severity of the consequence, with how big a deal Noah makes of it, is that gossip isn't just an action. It isn't just a kind of a choice that you do or don't do, but actually it reveals something about our hearts. It reveals something about who we are. And so Noah is really challenging him about who is he? What is he like? What should we as a people be like? And Jesus kind of acknowledges this as well. He talks about what we do and how that kind of how that comes out of our hearts. He says, "For out of the heart comes evil thoughts: murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These are what defile a person. But eating with unwashed hands does not defile them. Slander is gossip that you know is not true, or that you haven't checked isn't true." This is something that comes out of our hearts, these evil thoughts. It's actually something that's beginning kind of deep down in us, rather than just something that we say. It's part of who we are. And actually God wants to change that part of who we are so that we can be people that, again, that build up, that encourage, that honour other people. So let's have a look at what gossip is. The definition that I found, it's conversation or reports about other people's private lives that might be unkind, disapproving, or untrue. So it's this chat, and not all, it does say might be, not all gossip is negative, but a lot of the time it can be. There was a bunch of research done that kind of indicated that roughly 75% of gossip was pretty neutral. It was people just sharing thoughts and ideas, and it didn't really impact badly on people. But then the next biggest chunk is negative. And then there's a little wee tiny chunk at the end that's positive. Gossip is just talking about other people in ways that don't help or build them up. And I, sometimes when I'm preparing for messages, I like to talk to lots of different people about it and just get different ideas. And often it's, unlike Al Aiken, who usually wanders around the office interrupting us, I tend to do it to other people outside of the thing. So I chatted to the people at the cafe across the road here, and I talked to one of the nurses at the blood bank and all sorts of different random people. And they came up back with some really, really interesting observations. And one of the things, one of the baristas at the cafe just over on Blenheim Road that he said was, "Oh, gossip, it's juicy." And I'm like, "Oh, that's great. I like that." And so I started thinking about this whole idea of it being juicy. And who doesn't love a little bit of orange juice, eh? You can squeeze it and you get something that just is quite appealing out of it. No, I didn't mean that. Although I have been thinking, if you have ever tried to cram cardboard into your recycling bin, you've done box fit. Yeah. Anyway, that's completely beside the point. Isn't juice a bit of a treat? Isn't kind of having someone squeeze orange juice for you just something nice that they've done for you that you can really enjoy? It's a little bit special. It's a little bit kind of something that you don't usually have. I was thinking about the gossip being juicy. And it's reasonably attractive, isn't it? You kind of look at it and you go, "Oh, I wouldn't mind having a bit of that." Just not very much of it because my oranges aren't all that juicy. But that looks quite attractive. What we forget, though, is where do we get it from? Who got juiced? And when we share something juicy about someone else's life, we don't tend to think about this bit, that we're actually doing it at the expense of somebody else, that we are pulling the juice out of somebody else. They pay the cost for our enjoyment of what we might be sharing. The other way I kind of thought about it, many of you will have played Jenga. The idea is to see if you can pull out little blocks without knocking over the whole tower. Pop them up on top. And you just go on and see who can keep pulling out pieces until the thing falls over. And that's great for a kind of a little fun game that we play. Most of these don't want to move. But what if the pieces that we're pulling out are pieces of somebody's life? What if, as we pick away and pick away with little pieces of information, this is a person that we're picking at? When I worked in the States at summer camp, I was there for a number of different seasons. And there was one year where we just had this really, really nasty culture of gossip. And there was stories going on around about this person and that person. And it was a really kind of tight little community, people living together for the whole of the summer, 12 weeks. And as this gossip went on, people started getting sick. People started getting really anxious. People couldn't sleep because they were that worried about what it is that people might be saying about them, about who knew what about them. And eventually people collapsed. People couldn't take it. The question is, do we want to be doing that to somebody's life? Is that something that we want to be part of? Because sometimes, just those little things, picking away, we don't know what the rest of their life is like. We don't know how well they are supported. But shouldn't we be people that build up rather than tear down? So we think about that, but it's still that kind of thing of our culture is very confused about gossip, and we kind of end up in two minds about it. Because I mean, what media outlet doesn't have a gossip column? It's even in, if you go to like the Stuff News and stuff, and there's a whole gossip section in there. There's lots of things where it's just bits and pieces about people's private lives that seem to be news for some reason. I don't know why I need to know about William and Harry. I'm not really sure how that affects my life. I actually don't know most of it because I try not to read it. But we get very confused about this. We get very kind of mixed up about, why is this even helpful? Why do I want to know? Why does that person's life seem significant for mine? And I think it's because it is quite mixed. In Proverbs, it talks about how there's this whole mixture of things that go on with gossip. We recognize gossip is about betraying confidences, about not covering over stuff, about maybe sharing things that aren't yours to share. Gossip can separate close friends. It can cause that, can break down those relationships. It can get in between people when, oh, you've shared this thing about me. Well, why did you do that? Gossip can create or continue conflict. Just kind of stirring the pot. But again, gossip can seem like a treat. It can be like the juice. It can be like Proverbs talks about it as a tasty morsel that goes down into your gut. And I was like, well, what's going on? Why does that happen? Why do we have the sense that maybe this is okay, or just that it's attractive? Why does it make us feel better? And happily, there's a whole bunch of research about this. Interestingly, most of it comes down on the positive side of gossip, which I think is completely bizarre. Often because they're focusing on the gossiper and not the person being gossiped about. But I had a look at some of the benefits they were talking about in the research about what gossip does. The first one is that often it can make you feel better about areas where you're insecure. And so if you kind of talk about this person messing things up in this area, and aren't celebrities great? Because they mess things up at a high rate. And we can look at them and go, oh, well, I'm doing better than that. I'm not that much of an idiot. And I mean, really, we need to be a bit kinder to our celebrities because they're not there because of their wisdom. Rugby players, musicians, actors, we don't choose them because they're wise. We choose them because they're talented. Why would we expect them to be wise? But sometimes looking at the train crash that they make of their lives makes us feel a bit better about ours. Sometimes we can feel more connected with the other person because we're sharing something that we're trusting them with this information, but actually we're trusting them with somebody else's information. So it's not really all that helpful. And the last one is it creates a feeling of being in the in-group and they're the out-group, that we're doing the right things and they're doing the wrong things. It's us and them, and aren't we together all belonging in this nice circle where we're doing the right things and they're doing the wrong thing? The problem with all of these is that it's all false. See, this idea that we can deal with our insecurities by knocking somebody else down. It's that comparison never works. Comparison always leads to despair. See, what we need to be secure is actually faith in someone who's not us, not comparing with another person and against their strengths and weaknesses. We build this false sense of security if we build it out of comparison, because ultimately, there's always someone better and someone worse than you in a particular area that you chose. That's not going to help you to be secure as a person. Feeling more connected to the other person, that's a false intimacy, because again, if you're sharing somebody else's story, someone else's secrets, that's not what intimacy is about. Intimacy is about being seen and known by the other person. We develop true intimacy when we talk about our stuff, when we're vulnerable about who we are, not when we share things about other people. And that sense of being part of an in-group, again, we don't really build a sense of belonging against other people. Actually, it's about including people, about gathering, about contributing, about being offering ourselves to people, as opposed to throwing somebody else under the bus. And so all these things are false. False security, false intimacy, false belonging, at the cost of somebody else. See, we're actually still expecting somebody else to pay for the benefits that we're getting. And all of this comes together to be a real identity issue. Who are we? Who do we say we are? And the letter that Paul wrote to the Roman church, in the first chapter, he starts developing this argument about who we are, about our identity and how that changes if we acknowledge God, if we accept him, and the identity that he gives us. And we often miss this part of it. But as we reject that identity of who God is, then we start falling into these other traps. In Romans 1, it says they've become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. This is big stuff. It's really, really serious, because as we shift our identity away from the safety and security of being in God's family, being known and seen by him and reflecting him, we have to start trying to build our own. And Paul points out that when we do start building our own, it's so insecure that we start doing all these things to other people. We start pushing our insecurity outwards and taking from other people what we need to try and get what we want. And so we have this huge identity issue with who we are. And gossip is one of those things that kind of helps smooth over our insecurities, our sense of belonging, our sense of being included, because again, we make somebody else pay the cost for our benefit, to kind of help settle down some of those voices in us that say, oh, what if this person doesn't like you? What if this person, oh, well, maybe if they don't like that person more than me, if they disapprove of them, maybe I'll be more acceptable. And we end up chasing. Just like anything else, you can never get enough of what you don't really need. These false things will never satisfy you. One of the people that I talked to was one of the nurses at the blood bank, and I asked her about gossip. What did she think about gossip? And her answer was, well, it's pretty much unavoidable, isn't it? And then she stops herself and she's, well, no, maybe that's what I think, because I went through an all-girls school and now I'm in nursing, which is a female-dominated industry. And I'm like, no, it's guys have gossip too. It's not just one or the other. But she acknowledged actually that sometimes it's really hard to avoid even hearing it. But she talked a lot about how you try and stay away from the negative stuff and as much into the positive as she could. But her point was, it's really, really common. It is everywhere. It's not just in every newspaper and every media outlet, but it's in every workplace. How I guess, large or small that is depends. But I was thinking about how common is this? And I started to look through the Old Testament, and particularly through the narratives at the beginning of our Old Testament. And did you know, if you include slander, which is gossip, you know it's not true, conspiracy, which is plotting against somebody, which is a charming form of gossip, and people who are deliberately acting so that they won't get gossiped about, every book from Genesis through to Isaiah addresses gossip somewhere along the way. So it's all the way through. It's this thing that is in the background of all of these stories. And I think it's in the background of all of our stories as well. And I wanted to pick up an example from the Psalms when David is writing. He says, "My enemies say of me in malice, 'When will he die and his name perish?' When one of them comes to see me, he speaks falsely while his heart gathers slander. And then he goes out and spreads it around. All of my enemies whisper together against me. They imagine the worst for me, saying, 'A vile disease has afflicted him. He will never get up from the place where he lies.' Even my close friend, someone I trusted, one who shared my bread, has turned against me." And you can hear in there the sense of David knows he's being juiced. He knows that someone's coming along just to gather information that they can then trade with other people, that they can get this sense of security from, that they can use against him and for their own purposes. And again, right through the biblical narrative, this is an old problem, but it's also a very current problem. And so hopefully we all agree that this is a problem. But what can we do about it? What's the next step? How can we do better? Well, there's a passage in Ephesians 4 that I think is really helpful for us. It says, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, with whom you are sealed for the day of redemption." And I love this kind of perspective of focusing on the positives, on how we can use our words to build people up. And that dual focus of not just the person we're talking about, but the people who are listening to us as well. One of the interesting things I found as I was reading some of the academic research is that gossip helps to reinforce the values of a particular group of people. And so you can tell by what's gossiped about what is right or wrong. Again, it's always not great, not a great way to do it. But wouldn't it be cool if the way that we talk about each other benefits those who are listening, in the way that we go, actually, we talk about people positively. We encourage people. We celebrate people. We get to build them up, even when they're not here. One of the things I love is to be able to go, for example, to a parent around church and say, "Hey, I saw your young person doing this and this in a leadership role. It was really awesome, fantastic." Even with the hockey team I'm involved in, sometimes parents aren't able to make it to practice or to the game, and going and chatting with them afterwards, people love to talk about their kids, but being able to say, "Hey, look, your child did this awesome thing. Your daughter scored a goal," yeah, that they may not necessarily hear directly from their own kid. And so this chance to build up that person, but also it's a benefit for those who are listening, that actually our whole orientation of the way that we speak shifts from, how am I juicing their life, to how am I building into it? How am I helping to let that person know that we've got their back, that we are behind them, that we will hold them and cover over things? I had some quite cool chats between services, and one lady who joined our church as an adult, she said that when first she came in, she was really anxious coming into a group of people because she didn't know what people would say about her. But what a blessing it was that when she found that she could tell people things and they would hold it in confidence. And she just found that incredible strength of the community was that she could share things with people and then not hear it back to her. She was just over the moon about it. That was awesome for her. Then I had some other conversations as well, which we'll keep picking up. So if that's our goal, if that's our what we're aiming for, we need to think about how are we going to build other people up. I've got to say, actually, if you notice someone doing something really, really cool, while it's nice to talk to somebody else about that, tell them as well. Like, again, let them know they're doing well. It's really, really helpful. Just people feel appreciated, people feel acknowledged, people feel seen. And to be seen and known is to have intimacy, and we need that. But because gossip is quite pervasive, because it's around a lot of the time, it is sometimes helpful to figure out what to do. Where are we at? What's the next thing? So I've got some little questions to help us kind of filter this a bit. If you're listening and someone starts telling a story, do I need to know this if I'm not part of the problem or part of the solution? Now, obviously, if you're part of the problem, yes, you need to know this. If you are directly involved in solving it, yep, absolutely. If you're not, do you really need to know? Is it helpful for you to be in the loop? Or is it just another piece of information? So always good to check, do I need to know this? And sorry team, this is particularly for churches. If it's shared as a prayer request, how fewer details can I get by on? If you're asking me to pray about somebody, pray for somebody, if I know I'm praying for this person, cool, I don't need to know the situation. If I know I'm praying for this situation, I don't need to know their name. Because actually God knows. God knows that person and what they need far better than any of us do. And so if sharing a prayer request can slide over into that gossip thing of, oh, well, you know what this person's doing, we should pray about it. No. Hold their confidence. And that's one of the things that we've been really careful about as we have corporate prayer and services, is to keep things anonymous, to be able to pray for people in their different situations, but not tell everybody about it. And so I know it makes it more difficult sometimes to go, oh, well, so we're praying for a person in our congregation who's got a sibling who's facing a significant medical diagnosis. We do that because we want to hold their confidence, because we want to make sure that we're not telling somebody else's story or spilling the beans. And that is part of when we share in this stuff, only the details you really, really need. And even then, God knows them. When we're speaking, here we go. Do I have permission to share the story from the person to share the story? And this is one that I'm particularly careful about around stuff like engagements and pregnancies and things like that, where actually that person might want to share their own story, where they might want to tell people themselves. And so again, when we announce engagements in church, we're always really careful to ask people first. Do you want us to do this? Are you ready? Does this fit for you? And again, chatting with a mother between services who's just like, oh, yeah, I've gotten in trouble for this before when I've just been really excited about this good forward step that one of my kids is making. And they come back and they go, Mum, that's my news. And I think, again, it's not necessarily that they've been hurt, but they're disappointed because they didn't get to share that themselves. They didn't get to share the excitement of the story themselves. Sometimes it's not that we've wounded them, but just that they're missing out on something that they were looking forward to. So do I have permission to share the story? Sometimes it's about what we hope to happen. What do I hope telling this person this information will achieve? And this is often where we think, oh, well, maybe I need a bit of advice in this situation. Maybe somebody needs to talk to this person, but I don't really know how. Or someone needs to deal with this problem. But often that's not the right way to go about it. Often actually what Jesus invites us to do is to go to the person. In Matthew 18 it says that if your brother or sister sins, go to them yourself, just quietly between the two of you, and point it out. And then, if they listen, then great, solved, you're done. And nobody else has to know. It's that covering over, which can be awkward, which can feel right a little bit, oh, I don't know, will they still like me if I do this? I don't know how I'm going to feel. Do I have the authority to be able to do this? No. It might be awkward, but it's the right thing to do. Because imagine for a moment, thinking back to the story of Noah. So Ham tells his brothers that Noah's lying naked in his tent. And they decide, okay, we're going to go and cover him up, but we're not going to look. I don't know how big this tent is, but how do you find and cover up a naked body without looking? Are you kind of... Oh, sorry. It would have been really awkward. But they went and did it because they wanted to cover over the offense. I think we need to be the same. We need to be willing to deal with some discomfort in order to do this. If we hope that somebody else is going to deal with it for us, it's probably a little question in terms of how much we are committed to the relationship and a question about our courage as well. Sometimes it just takes a little bit of courage to go and have the conversation. The last one, and possibly the nastiest one, do I talk about this person more than I care about them? And this comes down to that whole relationship thing. If you don't have relationship with a person, why are you talking about them? Why do you feel like you've got the invitation to step into their lives, to pull a little piece out of their tower? Why? If we don't care for people first and foremost, if we don't love people, love our neighbor, we certainly shouldn't be doing damage to them. We certainly shouldn't, even if we think it'll achieve something, well, that's just us meddling. If we don't care, we need to make sure that we are demonstrating care with the choices that we make. And to be honest, I've gotten all of these things wrong at different times, as well as other ways of being insensitive or thoughtless, and occasionally just downright offensive. It's all of us, but we can all do better. We can all help other people grow. And I think it's really helpful to come back to that kind of positive statement of where we're heading in Ephesians. We lift our game. We lift up the things that are coming out of our mouths so that no unwholesome talk comes out of our mouth. So we're not indulging our curiosity or our kind of sense of almost titillation about what is going wrong in other people's lives. But actually, we're looking for the things that are right, the things that are going well, and we encourage them. If there are things going well, we go and talk to the person themselves and not other people, because we love them, and love covers over a multitude of sins. And if we can be covering over the things, not covering up, not ignoring, not pretending nothing is wrong, but covering over so that they've got time to heal and to be encouraged and to be built up. And then when we talk about people, we talk about them positively. We talk about the great things that they're doing. We talk about their courage rather than their fearfulness. We talk about their strengths instead of their weaknesses. We talk about their progress rather than their lacks. Then they are built up, and it benefits those who listen. Because then they go, oh, that's the way we talk about people around here. That's the way that we make a difference with our words. And we train our kids, and we help younger people, and we help older people, actually, who have, wherever you are on that journey, it helps all of us. And to do that, we're going to need God's help. Because even with all of that said, sometimes the juice looks good. And we need to be willing to go, you know what? It might look good, but I'm not drinking that, because I know what it cost. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much. Thank you that you call us to honor each other. Father, thanks that you cover over our sins for us. God, that the death of Jesus, you invite us into a forgiveness and into your mercy, into a place where we are held away from the things that we've done and in your arms, because you see us and you love us. Father, help us to be a community of people who do the same with other people, who hold people and hold their confidences to cover over sins and to encourage the right stuff, to be able to speak positively and with love and encouragement about each person day to day. And God, if we don't have good things to say, help us to keep our mouths shut. Father, we don't want to drink the juice that our society is addicted to. Help us to be people who mind our own business, except where we can build somebody up. And God, may our community be one where this is the theme of our conversations and this is the way that we encourage and shape the interactions that we have. Father, lead us and shape us and help us to resist the temptation to talk about others behind their backs. In your name, amen.